Good morning. My name is Craig Magtutu, and I'd like to thank you for attending this session. I'd also like to welcome the online audience currently watching this webcast from the United States as well as numerous international locations. Before introducing the speaker, here are a few reminders. The session is being streamed and recorded. We will have a question and answer period at the end of this session. If you're attending in the room and have a question, please use the microphones located to the left and right of the center stage here, so that the online audience can hear you. And if you're attending online, please use the chat pod to the right of the webcast player to ask your question. Finally, I'd like to encourage each of you to complete the online evaluation for this session, preferably while you're on site, but the opportunity to evaluate sessions continues after the conference. A link to each session evaluation can be found on the session's details page with the online agenda. If you are participating online, you can also find the link within each session page in the Virtual Convention Center. Shelton Wagoner is the Senior Vice President for Internet 2, responsible for the Net Plus portfolio of services. Prior to joining Internet 2, Wagoner served as the Associate Vice Chancellor and Chief Information Officer at the University of California, Berkeley, beginning in 2005. And now, Shelton Wagoner.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are around the world. Thank you for joining us today here in Denver for a discussion with some of the leading CIOs in the United States on how they have move services to the cloud. This is a follow-on, actually our third year of these types of discussions that began with a paper that we wrote. Several of us collaborated, Dr. Brad Wheeler and myself, in 2009, talking about the importance of moving education services above our individual institutions so that we could begin to really benefit from the kind of scale that education could bring to the market by influencing the commercial market, by leveraging investments we were making locally and sharing those with other campuses, and by fundamentally changing the way we consume and provide services. That paper is available archived in the EDUCAUSE publications repository. From that work came the Internet 2 Net Plus model. Internet 2 is the consortium of universities in the United States responsible for delivering a high-performance network interoperably with regional networks and the 221 academic members of that consortia. We are an independent 501c3 owned by the universities and managed by them at providing services on their behalf. There are 221 of the major research universities that are currently the academic members, and we have all of the regional networks in the United States that work with us. The Net Plus program was designed to support cloud services that we have been providing for years in higher education, but doing so in very siloed ways. For individual physicist communities, for astronomers, for biologists, we always have provided services from large instruments to many researchers. Now it was a question of how are we going to take that model and interoperate it with commercial services. So we developed a multi-step process that allowed each university to use the leverage and the experiences and the expertise they already had, starting with a research incubator phase to allow them to identify what services they were going to need or use. In many cases, we're creating these ourselves. So what do we do in research universities? We do research. So the research incubator phase allowed the campuses a means by which they could begin the process of deciding if a service could then be done at cloud scale. That moves to evaluation phase. An evaluation phase basically gets multiple institutions involved to evaluate what are the issues needed to take a project like a research activity. Maybe it's a research project around a commercial service, maybe it's an evaluation about a commercial service or one we built ourselves, and identify the issues necessary to make it grow to scale. From then we bring in multiple campuses, 5, 7, 9, 10, depending on the type of service, and we move to a service validation process. That service validation process then enables a master contract to be created, a master services agreement, a technical architecture to be implemented, identity implementation to be done interoperably with those services so that you can use your campus credentials to log into any cloud service. We move the services to the high-performance networking backbones of the education and research community so that we can lower the cost of delivering those services. We partner with the providers to determine what costs can we take out that fundamentally do not add value to higher education but are part of legacy models in delivering perpetual licenses or hardware. By having an early adopter phase, we then enable something to be exposed to the community for those people that weren't part of the process at all. Inevitably, there's something we miss. It allows the campus to get involved after the fact and be an early adopter to see if make sure that all of the provisioning, the deprovisioning, the approach works well. And then from there, it's finally added to a generally available services catalog, open to all of the Internet 2 member schools, and increasingly through regional partnerships and global partnerships will then be available to the broader education community worldwide. Just a quick service comparison. The program in 2010 identified some very low-hanging fruit. We were all buying individual certificates, web certs, that were done in a very ineffective way. DigiCert, Comodo, VeriSign had created models by which you would buy packs of 10, packs of 20. We found that not only were the economics of how you bought them inefficient, but they didn't really allow us to administer certificates in our institutions. And increasingly, we were seeing orphaned certificates, sites that would be regularly presenting invalid certificates, people that would purchase those, move on to new roles, the certificates would then expire and no one knew it. By creating a partnership with a commercial provider, we were able to create an enterprise interface for higher education that allows you then to have unlimited certificates for your institution at half the price you were paying before. So basically, no administration cost. You don't need to buy individual packs. You just get a site license. We now have over 200 subscribers to that service, generating $7 million in value for higher education that otherwise would have been lost in the cracks. And that's real dollars, not just opportunity costs of how much time we were spending. The next service in 2011, a year ago, Box was sponsored by seven campuses. That service was a commercial enterprise offering with a consumer freemium availability platform. We worked with that company to customize the offering for higher education. We moved the traffic to the Education and Research Network. We eliminated all the administration costs. We created a new way and a new product working with a commercial vendor that allowed us not to have to build this on our own. And in doing so, we now have, this slide is sadly out of date. It's a week old, and we've had two more campuses subscribe since then. So there's now 31 campuses with over a million licenses in deployment. The value that they get is substantial because they simply wouldn't have been able to buy these services at the commercial rate under the commercial terms. So it isn't just how much did you save, it's how much are you getting as part of your participation in these programs. This also extends to software as a service. We have things like Canvas, learning management system by Instructure. Campuses are deploying these services in the cloud. This is a pure cloud service. In the past, this was being purchased by department level. It's very costly to have eight departments all buy the same thing and all try to deploy it in different ways. When it's a cloud service, it could be done differently. So we have seven participants. It's in service validation phase now. I believe it goes into early adopter within the next few days, next few weeks. And the savings is not just in the dollars. These schools are working together to ensure that this provider continue to deliver the services as described by the higher education community. As we need them. We work with them on their roadmap, and we work with them on eliminating all the administrative costs with these products. So that is a very quick synopsis of what has come out of the work in the last few days. We have four of the leading experts in the country in taking large research universities and moving services to the cloud in a strategic way. Dr. Brad Wheeler is the CIO at the university. Indiana University. Brad hates it when I get those names. I was at University of California for so long, I think I'm pre-programmed. And Brad has responsibility for all of IT across Indiana University. Ron Kramer, previously at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, has been the CIO at Notre Dame now for several years and has a very active cloud program. Laura Patterson is the CIO at the University of Michigan, and Kelly Trovag is the CIO at the University of Washington. I haven't had enough coffee today, I don't think. So the key thing here is that you've got large publics, privates, everybody is trying to figure out how to do this. These are four perspectives around the approach to moving to the cloud. We would encourage you to ask questions. We have some questions. I intend to not play a difficult host here, but I do want to ask some questions of our panelists and hope that you will do the same. So Let's start with Ron. Can you tell me, Ron, you've been with Notre Dame for several years now. You decided to start moving to the cloud. You didn't have necessarily a uniform community all agreeing that everything should go to the cloud. What was your initial experience in presenting to your faculty community and to your administrative community your strategy for moving to the cloud?
So I think they actually brought it to me. And they brought it to me in a way not saying, I need this IT stuff. What they said was, we want to do our work on any device, anywhere we are, have access to all the materials we need, be able to share information with researchers and colleagues around the world. And if you could just do that, we would be fine. And it turns out, serendipity, the box work with internet was just starting. So we got into this in August of last year. And it was that idea of anything, anywhere, anytime, on any device that's kind of become the mantra for us, not just in terms of box, but what our faculty and students just expect of IT service now in higher ed.
So in bringing services to them, their expectation was you could do this overnight, you could do this in a month, in a year.
So they all think you can do it much quicker than you can, but I think with these cloud tools, you can do it much faster than we could traditionally, because we had to really do no infrastructure on campus except identity management, which I think is really the key, one of the keys to this. But in terms of actually building stuff out on campus, if you have a solid network, if you have a good security program, adapting the identity and access management work is one of the fundamental keys.
So Kelly, I'd like to ask you, given that you came into the CIO role from a different part of the university several years ago, I think you're in your third year now. What was the cloud presence when you joined that or took over responsibility for that role? And who did you have to convince, or who convinced you to move services into the cloud?
Well, like Ron, our faculty were already there. We did a little survey and we found there were literally hundreds of different click-throughs functioning on our campus. And we were leading providers or leading adopters of some of the scientific cloud compute platforms. We'd done a pilot with Hadoop. And I actually found out, I think the first month I was there, that we were going to launch Google Apps for Education in a couple of the departments. And the administration got very wary of that and wanted to take control of it, not IT, central IT, as much as the administration, our risk management program. And so we formed a little cloud computing subgroup and started to do the early contracting work for Google Apps for Education and LiveEDU. We'd actually had our alumni on LiveEDU for a while. Was some of the fundamental work that laid the foundation for some of the cloud services work that everyone's using now. And that work was really transformational in the institution, because we got faculty, administration, central IT, and the campus community computer directors all together in the same room. And we ran that committee for about, I think, 2.5 years on a monthly basis, bringing all the cloud contracts that we could find that people were using into the group on a regular basis, and not trying to be a CIO, but I call it the CIGO model of an enablement of these services. And it worked pretty well for the campus, but now they trust us. And we don't have that group anymore. They allow central IT to do the administration of these for the most part.
It's interesting, you started with a comment that they were already there, and so risk management brought you the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in Laura's case, I think it was different in Michigan in that they helped Laura create the problem by recognizing that they'd been distributed for so long and they didn't have a formal CIO role when you took responsibility for that. So you were given a mandate in the beginning to come up with a strategy for next generation of what you were going to do in IT. when you were being approached about doing that and interviewed for the position, were they demanding that you move to the cloud, or were they just saying, can you get control? Was risk management saying, you know, things are out of control, can you get it under control? What was the driver for you coming in to develop your strategy?
So the driver for me was that the university wanted to move to the cloud. And it was driven very much by cost containment, a desire for drive the cost out of the infrastructure, and then build an environment that allows for faster innovation. We had about 3 years earlier gone to a SaaS service for an expense and reporting on campus, and it took us as long to do that in the cloud as if we had written the system ourselves. And so we recognized, wow, we really have to change the way we go about this if we're going to be able to adopt cloud services. So it was actually the deans and the executive vice presidents who said, we believe the cloud is critical to the future to be able to drive out cost and allow our faculty to innovate. And so we launched an initiative called NextGen Michigan that very much was focused on cloud and cloud services. And then the first thing we did was put together a cloud task force that brought together all the offices that had concerns about the cloud, legal counsel, the registrar, the HR records people, the security officer. I mean, we brought everyone who had a concern onto a task force and had them work through all the issues and how we would mitigate them to enable cloud adoption.
So bringing all those people together pretty much ensured you'd never get anything done, right?
No, the opposite. It was that by bringing them together, by the time their report came forward, they had endorsed cloud adoption and had strategies for how we would mitigate each of the risks that their respective areas had.
So Brad, in Indiana, you had a different set of circumstances. Indiana had rationalized IT already. You'd spent years developing models that would allow you to support multiple campuses with common infrastructure, lots of investment associated with shared services. Mm-hmm. So you'd already achieved, if you will, huge economies of scale statewide in Indiana. What's your strategy with the cloud?
Well, I think it really goes back to the paper you and I wrote 3 years ago, and that is when you start talking about cloud, it's kind of like, pay no attention to those droids. Those are not the droids you're seeking, if you remember the Star Wars movie. In terms of IT services, seek scale. And what I mean about that is the right efficient level of scale. There are some things that really belong in the biology department because they're really good at it and they're great. And there's some stuff, if it's shared file storage, you know, to the illusion that we can do that better than a commercial provider who's doing it at, you know, the scale that they can do it is illusory. So for us, the real approach to cloud has never been, oh my goodness, cloud, shiny object over here, and we have a problem. It's just another sourcing strategy. Some things that is absolutely where the scale and the economics are most favorable. Some things, by the time you get into the legal wrangling and the contracts and protecting data and things with NSF grants, the contracting of it would really undermine any economic advantage over doing it yourself in a controlled environment. So we've really looked at it as where is the right point of scale in doing it outside or doing it inside. And I will say the box deal that Internet 2 cut, we signed on early, as did Laura and some of the others. That was really transformative for us in that it's not just this thing over there, but we connected it into our Citrix virtual app delivery, virtual desktop delivery, started really making it how we do things around at IU. And one quick story I might tell that is a win. Our board of trustees was all resolved that they needed to go to one of the professional board book services out there. And because they used them on the boards they served on elsewhere. And I said, why don't you guys try Box? And this was before Box had really gone mainstream. We were in the early stages. So they tried it and they did not like it because it's very chatty. Someone opened a document, someone put in a document, it tattles, you know, who's done what. And so they called me in and they wanted to discuss buying one of these professional board book services. So I said, let's just be careful. What problem are we really trying to solve here? So we walked it through in the life cycle of the information, what they actually do with it, and they realized the real issue was how information was formatted. It wasn't so much which bucket it was in. And Box has features. You can turn on and off the chattiness. And by the end of the conversation, the chair of the Board of Trustees said, "You're right, we can save 20 grand a year for this service we've already got baked into our identity. We'll just stay with it."
So you mentioned the word economics there, right? So much of what we have been doing is this balance between providing services to the unlimited, unbounded demand that is the differentiation within higher education, biology, physics, English, art. Yet in the cloud model, in many cases, we're not actually replacing things. We're seeing departments, campuses sign new services. Aren't we just spending more money now, even though the cost per unit may be lower? I mean, what are we doing to control those costs?
Well, I'm actually deploying a lot of services that are causing people not to renew their contracts. They're in existing contracts, and what I actually had to do was have a pool of money that I could say, I will launch this contract centrally and you're gonna not renew your contract. So we're doing that with our learning management system. We had multiple learning management systems across the campus, and I've launched a learning management system that's available to what I say are our four campuses, because I consider our online learning our fourth campus. So everybody's Blackboard, Moodle rooms, all of those costs are going away for their departments. We had probably six different lecture capture contracts on campus with hardwired costs as well. We've moved to a cloud-based lecture capture system called Tegrity. Some of them are using it in very high-end settings. Some of them are using it just on their desktop. Wide-scale adoption in a year, less than the cost of one department's cost system for all four campuses used in the medical center, saving literally $1 million probably over the cost of what. But the savings aren't in my department. The savings are for the departments out there. And they need that savings because they're being asked to teach more students, higher quality degrees, higher value degrees. More students want to be engineers. More students want to be, you know, chemists, more students want to be business majors, all more higher cost degrees.
I think that's precisely right. I mean, it goes to scale.
Right.
You're creating scale within your campus now.
Exactly.
Right. And we're doing...
In your case, Laura, if I remember right, the money pretty much lives everywhere but IT at Michigan, doesn't it?
That's accurate.
Yeah.
We're taking a very similar approach. We are consolidating many services across campus, commodity and infrastructure services, into shared services at the center. And then, as Brad suggested, where it makes sense, we want to move those things to the cloud. But by bringing them first to the center, we can build the on-ramp and determine which things can move effectively to the cloud because the economics are there, and which things should remain on campus. And so we're very much looking at hybrid cloud, some things on campus. But the first step is what Kelly was describing, to consolidate, to build the scale within the campus, as Brad did many years ago, so that we can then move to those things that can effectively go off campus, we'll move them off campus.
If I can add on that to the hybrid point, so research computing is incredibly expensive. And so on one hand, we've got faculty who say, I'll go up to Amazon and use my credit card and buy cycles there. There's a certain kinds of cycles you can buy on the cloud. But there's a certain kind you can't as well for certain categories of problems, or worried about where your data are living and things like that. So to that hybrid point, my research technologies group came to me and said, let's cut a deal with Penguin on Demand. They will configure high-performance computing cluster. They will put it in our data center. It's their equipment in our data center. We're going to connect it up across the national backbone. They're going to do some use of it with other EDUs, some use of it with us. And that was a capital expense we didn't have to buy. But yet, when we were writing grants, we could warrant that we know where the data are, we know where everything is, how security is being handled in a hybrid step with commercial firm.
So let's talk about picking services. I mean, you talk about Penguin and Box and various things. Now, Box was one of the early ones in this model. Ron, at Notre Dame, you deployed Box, yet isn't this a situation where the CIO is picking a service and telling everybody what to do and use it? I mean, how do you know if they're going to, how do you know if they like it, and why would you be the one to pick?
So that puts us in a very risky situation, because I think to move quickly, we do need to make informed decisions, but we do need to move. And so what we did was we immediately engaged the faculty and the staff and the students. We put together 40 use cases, some very technical, some down to like how do you share the work you're working on with a publisher. And so I think that immediate engagement in a prototyping or a feeling out with use cases that really make sense to the people you're going to serve is a way that we found this to be successful.
But what about the personalization of cloud services? I mean, you're picking a service like Box that has five competitors in the market. Many of them are consumer-oriented services that individuals already are using. Now, what I find interesting in the risk management arena is often they'll tell you not to sign a contract as your institution with a cloud provider because it's too risky. Whereas in the meantime, 90% of the people on your campus are already using providers with click-through agreements that pretty much tell them that they have no rights of any kind for any reason, for any purpose. So how do you balance the personal nature with, you know, IT trying to control it and come in, you know, with a service?
Well, so one of the things is to have great partners. And with the Box program, when I'm talking to my president and I'm saying Carnegie Mellon and Indiana and Michigan and Stanford, Washington are all doing this, they start to feel a little more comfortable a little more quickly. So the collaborative nature of the community here not only is of great value in terms of how we implement and what we learn technically, but in terms of how we talk to our deans and our presidents and our provosts, they kind of like to be in that club. And I think that's true, you know, throughout the university community. We all have peers that we know our presidents or chancellors respect. Partner up with them and do some of this.
So if I could add to that, because that's very much been our experience also. We, again, it sounds like we're the ones that bring committees together, but there are some people from Michigan in the room here that have actually worked on the group that developed a cloud strategy. And then they also are now working on how we're going to go forward, sort of what our principles are going to be, so that we don't have to go forward with every opportunity and bring lots of people together from across campus. We'll have a framework. And part of that framework is, let's first look to see if there is a Net Plus offering. Because if there's a Net Plus offering, we know it's gone through the steps that Shell described. We know a number of other universities are either using it or have taken it through its paces. And so by looking to the Net Plus service first, it will enable faster adoption, but know that it's had the appropriate vetting for use in higher education.
Yeah, I really want to pick up on that. Every time we cut some deal with a cloud provider out there, there's a lot of work to getting that connected to your internal systems, your policies, is there a security review and such. And so across the whole set of Net Plus services, the institutions that are signing on and going first because it's scratching an itch, it's something they need to do, they are flattening lots of that stuff out. I mean, everybody who comes behind and picks up another one of these, it's going to be a heck of a lot easier.
Yeah. Think, you know, to that point, one of the things people say, well, you know, why is Internet 2 doing this? It's more about the fact that the community is doing it, right? Because we already have master agreements in place to run the network. We already have master agreements in place to do various things. We already are delivering services to ourselves. So when these agreements get created, they're actually done by the councils of Notre Dame and Michigan and Washington and Indiana, small, large, public, private, five or six or seven councils get together. One of the things we're seeing is it's faster to have seven councils from seven different campuses work together than to have you work with your council to get it done. Because your council already is operating under the constraints they are aware of, many of which are not actually well known in the cloud yet. But when they get their five or six or seven partners together, respected individuals, and they work as a team, the product is incredibly high quality, and the speed is actually much better than you might imagine. In the old days, where we would try to collaborate on, you know, just trying to be a buyer's club, and I would encourage you to read the Marketecture of Communities in this month's magazine from EDUCAUSE, because if you think about buyer's clubs, we all had to agree to buy the same thing at the same time. Well, that concept is no longer valid in the cloud. You buy as you go. It's about speed. It's about much shorter life cycles. Well, if you can get all of the principles involved in making that happen up front, then you can add these services much faster. Whereas if you do it inside your own campus alone, then basically everybody's incumbent position is what you have to overcome, right? The procurement department, well, we know that we have to do an RFP because of our public procurement rules. Okay, so how do you do that in a world where you're buying services instead of, well, you know, we have these restrictions. You can't trial it in advance because then they're not able to participate in an RFP. What do you mean? We already have people using it all over the place in the web. Does that mean we're invalid from using them in an RFP? I mean, there's a bunch of concepts that are changing under our feet, and bringing together these cohorts, I think, you know, makes a big difference. But it's not cheap. I mean, it does take investment. It does take time. So I'd like to ask our panelists, it isn't just about joining. You have to do things to make it happen. Do you have the right skills in your organization to do this? Are your people ready? Is the system administrator ready to say, yeah, I don't need to run storage, I'll go participate in doing this with, you know, or your computing person ready to say, I'll go work with Penguin, or your person ready to say, I mean, for each of you, maybe starting with Brad, I mean, do you have the skills?
I'll say that's one of the reasons we've jumped in onto a number of the NetPlus pilots early is, even if we don't view that as a long-term, that's how we're going to solve that particular problem forevermore, getting our people involved on task forces, solving problems, working out identity, checking the security, I viewed our deep engagement in that as professional development and getting our team more cloud ready.
Yeah, I agree with Brad wholeheartedly on that. Our everyone that's participated in one of the NetPlus task forces has enjoyed the involvement and thought it's been a positive experience. Doesn't come away feeling like they aren't making progress or learning something and actually contributing to a better product for our campus. The other part of this is I've actually engaged in a number of different workshops around managing vendors, service management, other skill sets that we haven't invested in before in IT, less technical, more relationship management, which is a different skill set for our technical people. And I haven't, actually, they wound up being scheduled when I was out of town, but uniformly well accepted by our team. They really enjoyed going to soft skill training.
If I could say that one thing that's common amongst the three of us in this as well is your team learning to work and direct where they don't have line authority on doing something. They're having to work with people outside, very much like us who have worked together in Sakai or Kuali projects. It is a big professional development step for our folks who learn how to do that rather than working in their organizations within authority.
Laura?
So a couple of experiences we had with Box. I would say we were actually very naive when we agreed to do Box. Even the way we made the decision was very unlike the way we normally make a decision. There were three of us sitting in a room, and we said, well, what's the risk? You know, the worst that could happen is we put this service up and the students and faculty don't adopt it. And the beauty of it is, after our two-year agreement ends, then we'll get out of it. We haven't invested in the infrastructure. We haven't invested in new staff to run it. And so that's part of the beauty of the model. What we were naive about was it did take more effort to integrate it. And so we recognized, wow, to Ron's first point, we've got to do a lot more to beef up our identity management team and the way they think and go about integrating all these services into our infrastructure at home. The second thing we recognized is that we needed to beef up our contracting skills. And so we have, in fact, added staff we hired someone and brought in new skill set so that we could be a better partner in these processes as these systems are evaluated and go forward. We actually have started looking at more business analysts and not needing as many developers, because again, for the integration and the impact on business process. And so getting into it once helped us, going through the whole process once helped us see where we needed to start shifting our skill sets so that we could more rapidly move forward on the next opportunities.
So Ron, you're in a little different situation in that you've got, you know, big, biggest, and big, big, big over to your next year, hundreds of thousands of students, you know, very diverse communities. Notre Dame is a premier institution, but it's a much smaller footprint. You have fewer staff, smaller team. You know, how did this play out in your community?
Well, so we're actually changing our organization to focus on these kinds of services now. And, you know, we're creating a position called product manager. So one person will oversee Box. One person will oversee SharePoint. And, you know, so we have about 30 services now that we've identified as, instead of having developers and infrastructure experts and such, we're going to have product managers that serve as the liaison to the groups we serve. The other thing I'd tell you is, don't believe you're going to go into these with no angst from your staff. Because when you start this out, you know, the storage team is going to go, are we going to have a job? You know, where is this all going? And I think so communication is incredibly important. It's a little easier at a small university, I think, than at some of the large ones. But really take the time and care to talk with your staff. Because no matter which one of these you get into, it's probably something you sort of do already. And you have to really help bring them along into this new paradigm.
I want to follow up on Ron's comment because we should talk. We've done a very similar thing. Our staff now, we think of them as service brokers, mm-hmm. and managing the life cycle of a service, driving the adoption of the service. And so we too have created service portfolios and have staff that think of Box as one of our services, and the job of the portfolio owner is to drive adoption and drive that product through its full life cycle, including when we should get out of it because the adoption is dropping off. And so we're doing a very similar thing.
Yeah, exactly what we're doing as well. We're service management, IDLE, service frameworks, service life cycle, the same thing. I also want to talk about the staff. I took over in a very tough situation in Washington. Many of you know that. I had a huge layoff that precipitated 66 people lost their jobs, and one of my predecessors was out saying that we were doing this because we were going to move to the cloud. That was his, can you imagine? And at the same time, I had faculty.
That's a big selling point for this
staff. Yeah, and
we'll only layoff half of you, but we're moving to the cloud.
We're going to move to the cloud. And that wasn't true. I mean, my staff was really ready to embrace the cloud, but that was a very difficult moment. And the UWIT staff is a tremendous staff. They're highly talented, great at Indian access management, great security staff. But they needed to be bucked up a little bit. And so I wrote a bunch of internal blogs. I'm a very internal communicator. They're Already There was the title of one of the blogs about why we were there. I've looked at clouds from both sides now. It's the silver lining in clouds. I can't remember all the little, I think of these little catchy titles. They'd be short, no longer than a page. Really about what was going on, where we were going. Really laying all the warts on the table. What was going well, what wasn't going well. I think it's important that you are honest with your staff and don't make it all rosy, because it's not all rosy. And especially if you're an early adopter in some of these cloud services, you can't just gloss over what is not. Our staff have incredible pride and have delivered incredible service. And sometimes we go, I mean, I don't want to name cloud providers, but sometimes we'll go, you know what? This wouldn't happen if we were delivering the service, because it wouldn't happen if they were delivering the service. And so that's a hard point. And I think you need to be honest. And I do a lot of communication. I haven't been blogging as much lately because I've been really busy, but I did a lot when we were in the throes of some of this early stuff. And short, funny, honest was helpful.
So one thing, if you can flip to that last slide, that we use in our discussions, our IT staff, seeing where we're going and opportunities for their skill sets as the world's evolving, rather than maybe at some point feeling like, hey, I'm the server dude and I don't really want to do anything but be the server dude. You know, things are happening there. And so in that graphic, you can see, if you started at the middle, we've got the person and a whole range of devices. We've got a PC-based environment out there, we all do, but increasingly it's tablets and other things such as that. And so you see this shift of where we're already pretty strong right now, including great use of some things that are out in the cloud, student email to Google and Microsoft, bless them, thank God they took it for us. But some things that we're doing together, HathiTrust around the library, that's more an internal cloud that the universities are building together. But when you move to the right side of that diagram, you start to see where it's increasingly different. It's not us just distributing Microsoft or Adobe software that we bought a package deal for, but it's delivering, you know, through desktop virtualization or app delivery. They can go just log on with a web browser and go run Photoshop. You asked also a very important point. How much of the cost of the cloud is additive to this expense base we've already got, and how much of it really becomes a substitute, a new and cheaper way of doing things? So we're really young in doing this, and I don't know if you've seen one of these guys. This is an Android mini PC. It's about double the size of a memory stick. Still a little immature. They're still getting there. But these guys are about $60 to $80. You plug them into any HDMI monitor, Bluetooth, keyboard, you know, Wi-Fi enabled, and you've booted up and you've got the Android OS. You hit a Citrix receiver on their app, you can run Excel, you can run Photoshop, you can run anything. So when you look in student computing labs or staff workstations and such, and you start looking at new computing delivery models, that instead of hundreds of dollars per device and hundreds more in maintaining all of those devices, you know, as this starts to mature over the next few years, the economics are extremely compelling of app delivery going to scale. Now, whether that scale out of our data center or scale out of someone else's, you know, we'll learn as we go.
So we talked about, and I would encourage anybody with questions to step up and ask those. If we have any online, to go ahead and let us know. We talked about the idea that the staff are worried. What about the CIOs, right? What about your jobs? What about the fact that your jobs are changing? What's off limits in the cloud? What are you not going to bet your career on over the next 5 years? What do you know has to stay out of the cloud? And is there a clear model that you're going to follow that says, thou shalt not go to the cloud for this, or is it just not that clear? I think I'll put Ron on the spot first.
Yeah, so I'm not really worried. I think that as you go into each agreement, you really have to understand what you're going into. So for Box, you know, we give everyone 50 gig, every faculty, staff, and student 50 gig of storage. We know it's encrypted at rest and in flight. We know we can administer the data at Box. And those are the kinds of parameters I look at with these kinds of services. But even though we have all that, we tell people, you know, don't put highly sensitive data in here. Don't put credit cards. Don't put Social Security numbers. Don't put HIPAA data. And we do that not because we don't think it's safe, but it takes me beyond a little bit of the risk tolerance that I have for these things. So run-of-the-mill kinds of things we do in everyday university life, if the contracts are right, I feel really good about it. For the stuff that gets on the edge and gets a little higher value in data and as a higher target, at this point I'm staying away from that yet.
I agree with Ron, but I think your question was within 5 years, and I actually think the market will mature fast enough that probably within 5 years we'll be able to put just about anything we want into the cloud now. Maybe I'm overly optimistic.
You heard it here first. More is moving to the cloud.
But I do, and the reason is that the market is seeing the demand. They're seeing the opportunity. And I think the market will mature so that right now, I'm with Ron, but I think within 5 years, we're going to see dramatic change.
So let me come back to this question because we do have a few in the audience, and I want to make sure we're getting to those. So first question over here. Yes, ma'am?
So my question is really two parts. It really has to do with staffing. So you know, state-funded institution. We've got staffing issues, can't find people. I've already asked my people to take on more and more. We've got campus priorities that outnumber me. The list just keeps growing, right? And we know the cloud is upon us. How do you balance those competing priorities? Obviously, my guys would love to be in the development stages and be on this right side and would love to play, but we've got some other things that we need to get done. And so I'm struggling with how to convey and how to differentiate the priorities when we know the cloud is upon us. And the second part is, some of my staff are really uninterested in being a service manager. They're box huggers, right? So they really do want to touch that. So what would you tell them? What do I tell them?
So I'll start with the first part of the question, because I think everyone in the room will acknowledge that probably forever there's always going to be more demand than supply in IT management within universities. And so we faced the very same issue. And what we realized when we did the Box project was it took a lot more effort than we expected. You know, we were thinking Dropbox, you just go get it and it works. And so, hey, yeah, we'll sign up for Box. And then we realized that it took a lot more work than that. So we have moved to portfolio management, and have realigned our staff into pooled resources. And we do set priorities quarterly for the most important things that we're going to work on, and so that we can move our staff more nimbly than we did in the past, so that we could free up cycles to work on these things, because we do think it's the most important investment that we can be making.
So Kelly, what about the server hugger part of that question in your community? You probably don't have any of those folks.
You know, I think that staffing replacement is probably the greatest issue looming in higher education for all of us. We're not going to have enough server huggers to keep our servers going if we stay with the same business model that we're in. I look at my staff, and I've got great staff, but most of them are my age or older. And so
it's only another 30 years of service out of those.
They're youngsters, yeah. She says.
No, it's not. What we've been able to do, and I think the wins have been, in showing how the cloud in some of these instances has been able to free up staff to do more. And the areas that we've been emphasizing have been in our student applications, and because students are already there, they can take change very quickly, probably more quickly than anywhere else in your institution. Your student-facing applications, you can change things every quarter. The faculty and staff, not so much.
We just have time for one more question, so I'm going to go over here. I'm sorry, sir, we will be here afterwards if people would like to have some additional discussion. And I would encourage you to go to the internet2.edu site and look up the catalog process, the participating institutions, the services, to get a better sense of how you might implement a model like this or join this model. Yes, sir.
Just a quick question. Any plans to expand Internet2, NetPlus, beyond the United States borders and increase the economies of scales with other countries, other continents even?
Yeah, we've had a request, and we have a global partners program that will be starting in January. The six initial countries that have expressed interest, Canada, New Zealand, Switzerland, Netherlands, UK, and Australia. But there are others that have expressed interest as well. So the nice thing about the cloud, it knows no bounds, and the work that we do here as an education community will extend quite nicely. So we would expect that this program will not only extend out, but will extend in through K-12 and to the small schools as well, who may not have the resources to do what the leaders you're seeing here on stage have been able to do, but who can join and follow and ride that total scale to be able to deploy those services much quicker. I'm sorry we're out of time for today. Please join me in thanking our panelists for their kind time. And